Man, all I really want to do is I wish I could just, you know, analyze everything I can in the city of Indianapolis.
There's apps for that.
Really?
Yeah.
What like, if I,
what do you want to be able to do? What do you want to be able to analyze?
What if I wish I would be able to like analyze the rents and just everything would be super cool.
There's an app for that.
What if I wanted to turn myself into a monkey?
There's an app for that.
What if I wanted a cheeseburger to come out of my camera right now?
There is literally an app for that. If there is an app, whatever you want to do, I guarantee that our guest today has an app for whatever you want to do.
Dude, I got to listen to Neil Bawa. And this is the episode 100 in the Hizzy on the Simple Wholesaling Podcast.
Welcome to Simple Wholesaling, a Christian podcast that supplies simple yet effective content for real estate investors and business entrepreneurs. Get advice, tips, and tricks so that you can stay true to your values and achieve your dreams with real estate investing you can trust. Now, introducing your host, Brett Snodgrass.
What's up, all you Simple Wholesaling fans out there? Thank you for joining us again on another episode of the Simple Wholesaling Podcast. My name is Brett Snodgrass, and I'm with my lovely co-host, Brian Snyder.
I love how you introduced me as lovely.
I know.
Makes me feel special.
I do. I either introduce you as the bearded woman or the lovely princess. The next No, man, how's it going?
It is going well. Really, I want to check in with you because this is episode 100.
I can't believe it.
So this four for me, but 100 for you.
That's right.
Do you feel like you know a little bit about what you're doing now?
I do. If you're a first time listener, go back and listen to episode number one and see, and just kind of put a comment in the show notes at simplewholesaling.com/episode100, or go leave a review and see if we've gotten better. I don't know. Let's let the audience participate. But I'm super excited. It's almost like I kind of forgot that this was episode 100. It's been a blur. I can't even believe we've been doing this almost 2 years, and it's just been crazy.
It's really exciting, like for the show and just for the business stuff. 100 shows, and I feel like we're still going strong. So
yeah, we've just touched the tip of the iceberg, people. So stay tuned. We have some crazy stuff, especially if you want your mind absolutely wowed. Like, you know, if you're going to a magician show or you're going to a circus, this interview is not even comparable to that. It's so much better because we interview a gentleman named Neil Bawa, and he blows my mind with how much wisdom that he has in his systems and his processes. And he has created an app, or he knows different apps that will blow your mind and give you so much information and make your life so much easier.
This is the episode of all the guests. You guys had some phenomenal guests on here, but this is literally one that I just kind of sat there and I didn't know what to say because I just wanted to keep listening to him.
Yeah.
Like, he's so much knowledge about this stuff.
Especially when he starts to go into, he has 40 different apps that can really help you improve your processes, your systems, and your business. And he gives just a little taste, a few apps that can literally change your business. I always believe that if you can just get one nugget, one app, one process, one system, one software to help you move the needle so much further along, it will change everything for you. And I feel like that this is what Neil does today. So stay tuned for that. But before we go into that, man, let's just talk about you. You've been on, this is your fourth, this is my 100th, but how you doing? How's the role going? How's the fam? What's your feelings on everything going so far with the Simple Wholesaling team the last 5 months?
Well, I love our team. Like, I really am excited about who's on our team and what they're doing. And we got some characters on the team for sure.
Yeah, we do.
We should put that in the notes of like a future episode, should just be like interviewing people from our team, because when you got characters like Gary and Tyler, they're just, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. We definitely got some personalities. We have some high D personalities, which have you guys ever taken the DISC test? The high D is kind of, you know, a dominating personality. And then there's the I, S, and C, and there's like the detail oriented where if you forget a period, they flip out. We have that type of personality. We have the super laid back personality, which is like me, I think, but you know, kind of, I don't
know.
That
is definitely you.
I internalize it though. I internalize my stress. Nobody knows I'm stressed, but like I'm getting ready to burst from the insides out. But man, you're doing an amazing job. Thank you so much for just doing everything. You're on the ball. You're on top of it. My biggest concern, if you guys are out there leading a team, I don't know if you feel the same way, but my biggest concern is that my team members are happy, that they enjoy what they're doing, that they're excited to come to work. And that's really one of my biggest concerns. And that's why probably I'm always asking, are you okay? I actually asked Chrissy, who is our brand new acquisition / dispositions assistant. And last Friday I went up to her and I said, what level is your joy with this position? Like, what's your joy level at? She's like, I'm doing good. She didn't tell me a number, but she said, I'm doing good. So anyway, I'm always concerned about that.
That is good. And I like the fact that you are like that as a boss and as an owner of this company and stuff like that, because I think when you ask us that and you do genuinely care about that for your employees and for our teammates or team members, I think we in turn kind of put that on our clients as well. So yeah. Whether you're buying from us or you're selling to us or anything like that, I think we are generally concerned about that you are. We want you to be successful. We want you to have this opportunity that you, whatever opportunity you need, we want to bring that to you. And I think that kind of comes from you imparting that into us. So it's good. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And just with that, if you guys want to get to know Brian more, ask him some questions. He's kind of the new kid on the block here at Simple Wholesaling. He's been with us for 5 or 6 months now, but just email him at brian@simplewholesaling.com. And that's going to be in the show notes at simplewholesaling.com/episode100. And he is our dispositions manager. So he is selling our properties to buyers all over the nation, all over the world. So if you're local, interested in Indianapolis, if you're not local and you live in California or Florida or wherever, and you're interested in Indianapolis, or if you live in Israel or Egypt, I don't know.
Any interest? We do have a couple international buyers, so yeah.
Yeah, feel free to reach out to Brian. We would love to work with you.
Now, simple tips and tricks that make real estate investing easier, faster, and better. Brett's Insight of the Week.
All right. This week for the Insight of the Week, Brett, I got a good question for you. So I know that we work with a lot of new wholesalers, people that are looking to get into this industry, and people want to do what we do. But one of the things they struggle with is being able to find money. All right. So my question for you is, if you're starting off and you're beginning to wholesale, how do you find hard money lenders to help you out with that?
Well, let me just kind of back up a little bit and start off and kind of defining wholesaling. Because what we do in the industry is we buy the house and then we sell the house. We take the house down. Some wholesalers, they might say, well, I don't need a hard money lender because I'm going to assign the contract. But let's just say you are like us. And eventually, I would encourage you guys, whether you're starting out or maybe a few years down the road, that you do want to be able to take down and buy your own houses, right? That's kind of the goal.
Yeah. And this would actually work too for somebody that is trying to, maybe they're new to flipping or rehabbing or even new to, you know, renting. They want to get into the game, I guess, like looking for hard money lenders for them as well.
Yeah, definitely. So this is just kind of something that I have developed, and just through the years, if I was just starting out, I would start talking to your relatives or your family or your friends. And it's funny, I just had this conversation today. This is actually, maybe I won't say the name, but it was somebody that I know that I haven't talked to in a really, really long time, but they knew that we were in real estate. They happen to live in California, which you live in California, you know that the prices of homes have risen a lot in the last few years. Well, they were asking me if they should sell their house and then maybe what they should sell it for. And then if they do sell it for that price, they're going to have a chunk of money and they don't know what to do with it. It's going to be, you know, $60,000, $70,000, something like that after it's all said and done. And what I would say is I talked to a lot of people like that. I said, one of the options is you can loan it to us or a company like us, and it's secured by real estate. And you can make anywhere from 10% up to maybe 20% interest. And that's very enticing to a lot of people. If I, you know, they don't want to do anything. They don't want to rent a house. They don't want to go out and flip houses like we do. They don't want to do any of that. But if they want to make a passive return on their money, making an extra 10% to 20% interest on their money is actually really good. So I would start with family, friends. My dad, he has loaned us money. I have a lot of friends that have loaned us money. And just kind of see, is the stock market working out for them? You know, are they scared about the stock market? Mutual funds, you know, they can put it in a CD and make, you know, 2% interest. I don't even know what it is. Or would they like to make 10% or 20%? That's where I would start. But as you start to build traction and you build some success, I believe that if you start to build a brand and you are successful at flipping or at wholesaling, keep that in mind. Build just a portfolio or a program of showing people, here's what I've done. Are you interested? Because it's a win-win. And people that see that you are successful, they actually find you. I've literally had two calls just in the last couple of weeks, people that, hey, I have an extra $50,000 lying around because they hear about us, they listen to our podcast, they trust us, and they ask me, have you ever forfeited on a loan? And when I say, well, no, I mean, and I don't plan to, then, you know, that builds that trust. And so the more you're successful, you know, the money just kind of follows you eventually.
And I think a big part of that is just don't be afraid to talk about what you want to do, like what you need and what you want to be doing. Just share that with people. Just put it out there and don't be afraid to talk about that.
Yeah, especially like guys like me and some of the, I mean, I'm not saying I'm old, but I'm getting, you know, I'm 38, getting up there.
You're older than me.
Yeah. So. But I have some friends that are entrepreneurs. They're 50 years old, 60 years old. But even guys like my age, we love to see young, hungry entrepreneurs come out and be successful. So if I was sitting down with a hungry individual entrepreneur and they had a great idea, I would love to try to help them. And one way maybe is to invest in them or their business. And people really want to do things like that. And I think that that's awesome. So don't be afraid to, you know, approach people like that because they really do want to help. They've been successful throughout their life. They have a lot of money sitting over here. And what better way for them to use their money than to help a young entrepreneur be successful as well?
Do you dream of a life that is purpose-driven and makes a difference? Spiritual Foundations.
So in today's Spiritual Foundations, we are going to go to Mark chapter 9, verse 35. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and he said, if anyone wants to be first, he must be the very last and the servant of all. And I love this verse and I love Jesus's teachings because he turns our culture and everything that our culture teaches up on its head. Because in our society, and probably forever, people have wanted to promote themselves. They wanted to rise to the top, have the most power, and be a master of all, and not to be a servant, not to serve others, but just to have servants surrounding them. When you think about kings or, you know, really wealthy people, rich people, people that have a lot of power, you see them with servants, right? They have butlers, they got maids, and people just serving them hand and foot all the time. And Jesus kind of turns that around and he says, if anyone wants to be first, he must be the very last and the servant of all. And to me, that truly means that you have to have a servant's heart. And if you truly have that humble servant's heart and you put others before yourself most and all of the time, then you will be exalted. You will be raised. I mean, look at Jesus's life in of itself. He came down as a humble child. He grew up being poor. He didn't have anything. He called disciples to him that basically were nobodies, were fishermen and just tradesmen. And he literally took his own life and died a horrible death on a cross, like a criminal's death that other criminals are suffering for you, right? So he was the ultimate servant. you know, giving up his own life for us. And he has called us to do that. So maybe you don't have to do that because Jesus has already done that for you. But each and every day, whether you're sitting down with a client, your family, a friend, or whoever it is, in your mind, put them before you. And Jesus says that if you continuously do that, you will be exalted. And maybe he's talking about in eternity. You know, you'll be getting rewards in eternity. Maybe you won't even see any rewards in this life. I believe that it's very rewarding when I put other people before myself, but I'm sure that there's eternal, and in scripture it says that there's eternal rewards as well. So what do you think, Brian? I mean, what's this mean to you? And when you read this, you know, especially in this industry, when we're all trying to promote our own faces all the time.
I think that, I mean, definitely the word that jumps out with this scripture is just humility. You have to be humble. You have to be able to, you know, not put yourself first in everything that we're doing. You know, with this industry, I think it's just huge that you are able to, you realize that don't act like you're above everybody else that you're working with. You know, we kind of talked about earlier in this episode, there's just the different personalities that we have on our team. In this industry, you're working with a ton of different personalities, just different types of people, but you have to be able to serve them. You need to make sure that they, whether it's your team, whether it's your clients, whether it's people that are selling you, make sure that they are getting what they want, make sure that they are happy, and kind of putting it out there of, hey, we want to help you. And I think that's where, you know, we've been successful in that, of making sure we give people, you know, help people out, get what they want. But at the same time, that's not what our purpose is. That's who we want to be. That's who we are. This scripture right here, it just sums it up completely. You don't have to, you know, once you think that you are first, once you think you're at the top, that's when you get knocked down. But when you have that reality of just, hey, you know, I am who I am and I'm just going to do my best. And, you know, even if I'm at the bottom and I need to work my way up or whatever, that's when you're at your best.
Definitely. And just to kind of go with that, the more money that you make, the more successful that you are, the more power that you have, the more difficult it is to be humble because everybody is looking at you. You know, for example, we've been able to create a decently successful business. We have this podcast. We've been asked to be a member and kind of help lead some of the Syria events. We have our own meetup. We've been asked to do a radio show. We've been asked to speak at some different things. We've been asked to do these things. So people are looking at us and say, wow, you guys are really successful and you're amazing and all this. And the more that happens, the more difficult it is to be a servant or to be humble. And I think that I always have to remind myself of this scripture each day that I need to be a servant. The reason why we have got to where we're at and we are successful is because we have tried to represent Jesus and serve people in a positive way. And we cannot forget that. You know, sometimes I think I could never go back to cleaning the junk and the trash and the human crap out of houses. I couldn't do that. But then I say, you know what? I'm not above that. If I have to do that, I have to do that. You know, I'm never above a certain point, right? So we have people in our business that do that and they love it and we pay them for it. But if I have to do that, then I have to go back and do what I have to do to serve whatever I'm doing, to serve my family. If I have to do that to put food on the table, I just have to do that. So never think that you're above a certain position or person or any of that. You know, we're just here to have that servant's heart and just kind of represent Jesus. So we hope that you guys enjoyed the Spiritual Foundations today. We do this to help you guys and to help us be a reminder to have a servant's heart, to represent Christ in all that we do. And now we're going to get on to the interview with Mr. Neil Bawa, who is revolutionizing real estate with his knowledge and technology. It's going to blow your mind. Guys, we are super stoked for our guest today. We get a chance to sit down with the one and only Neil Bawa. And if you haven't heard of Neil, he is the president and COO of Financial Attunement, which is a commercial real estate investment company that specializes in acquiring apartment complexes all across the U.S. for over 200 investors. Neil is an accomplished single family and multifamily investor. He's actually just telling me about his one of his very first projects where he helped develop a 27,000 square foot building, which he's going to definitely dive into that. And he currently owns single families, duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes, and apartment buildings in California, Illinois. And he's an active passive investor in multifamily and commercial syndications with over 2,000 units in 8 different states. That is a mouthful, Neil, but welcome to the show. You are very accomplished. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Brett. Thanks for having me on the show.
No problem. I'm super excited. I know you get a chance to speak and do these things and a lot, but just kind of if somebody hasn't heard of you before, one of our audience members, let's dive into your origin story. What did you do before you got into all these fancy, complicated syndications in commercial real estate, and take us into how you got into real estate?
Sure. So I'm Indian in origin, and like a lot of Indians, I'm a technologist, a computer science degree, you know, came to Silicon Valley in the late 90s and worked at a company, became a partner at that company. I was at a technology college and didn't do the dot-com thing. So we went from, you know, opening it in the late 90s to selling it in 2013. So it was a 15-year journey for that technology business, and it was a very successful exit at the end of it. And as I was doing that, the college had lots of different campuses. So my first taste of real estate as a chief operations officer was to build out campuses, right? So that's how I learned the real estate trade, buying campuses. So you were just talking about a building. So it was 23,000 square feet and it was a shell, and it had to be built out into combination of offices, classrooms and hallways and restrooms and all of those sorts of things. And I'd never done that before. So I jumped in and basically learned from architects and general contractors and learned by making mistakes. And then I followed it up with a second campus, which was 33,000 square feet. And I didn't have the money to buy it, but I had to buy it. I couldn't rent it. It was a shell building and I needed it ready in 10 months. So I came up with this crazy idea of condominiumizing offices, right? So you hear about condominiumizing apartment buildings often and selling off pieces. But offices can also be condominiumized in pretty much the same way. It's a much more complicated process. So the idea was we buy this 33,000 square foot building, and on the day of closing, we sell pieces of the buildings to other investors who then develop their pieces into offices. And then as our college grows, our technology business grows, we would then go back in and rent those offices back from them with the long-term goal of the entire building being rented by our business. And that was done in about 2007. And it took about 5 years for us to take over all the suites back from those owners. And now pretty much all of the 33,000 square feet is rented by that technology business. So that's how I kind of got into real estate, through my day job. I no longer have that day job. I exited after the sale of the business. That was in 2013, early 2013. But I was doing a lot of real estate since then. So 2003 was the first campus, 2007 was the second campus. And then between 7 and 14, I built another 4 campuses, not construction from scratch, but taking over existing campuses and modifying them. So that's where I learned a lot of the real estate skills. As far as single family and multifamily, you know, I'll go into that later, but that's kind of my background.
Wow.
Tech guy, tech geek.
That's quite a background, you know, and you said you haven't ever done all the bathrooms and hallways. I mean, why would you? I mean, isn't that just an everyday thing that people just do, you know, just develop? It's like, you know, I'm going to skip buying those single family homes and I'm going to just build a skyscraper in downtown Indy. That's pretty awesome, man. It's definitely, you learned, I'm sure, a lot. And that's pretty cool. I don't think I've ever heard of condominiums with office suites. That's pretty cool.
Well, necessity is the mother of invention, as they say. I had 9 months and, you know, cohorts of students waiting to start, and I didn't have a building. So it all ended out well. So very happy about how that started.
Cool.
Yeah. Very cool. So I know you're kind of talking about how you are a tech geek and stuff like that. How are you able to use technology to help you with just all of the real estate investing that you're doing?
Well, you know, I teach about 3,000 students a year about the magic of multifamily and about real estate. And one of the things that I tell them is that if you have even the slightest amount of technical talent, you're in luck because you have an advantage in commercial real estate or in single family real estate over other people, because real estate is the least technologically advanced vertical in the US. So it used to be insurance that was the least advanced, but now they've become more advanced. But real estate, there's so much opportunity for people that are technologically advanced to jump ahead of people that are not. Because if you think about it, you know, people have been buying real estate for over 1,000 years, right? And, you know, for rentals and for profit. And a lot of real estate is about very rich fat cats that are very old fashioned. Now, these are very rich people. They're very smart, but they're very old fashioned and they're not really into using technology. So you can disrupt real estate in your own little way at a single family level or a multifamily level so easily. And I teach about 35, 36 different applications, all of them web-based, that can be used to disrupt real estate. Each of these applications can be the difference between you making no money and you making 20% on a deal. That's how powerful they are. And what's amazing is how inexpensive they are. These are the sort of things that in the 80s and 90s, gurus would charge you $30,000 to learn one of these applications. Now they're 19 bucks a month or 9 bucks a month. And so having all these cloud services available that have astonishing data and analytics allows you to make much better decisions, but you really need to know what these apps are.
I love that. And, you know, I'm right there with you. One of my gentlemen that I really, when I first got into real estate and I rode around the car with him, he's not into technology at all. He's a very wealthy man, but I actually still see him. He still faxes the docs. He doesn't know how to use the email, just things like that. And I do believe that technology is changing. Everybody, you know, and I think I heard a gentleman say, we don't have a choice whether technology is going to change our life or not. It's just going to happen. And so we really either have to ride with it one way or another. So with that said, what are some of those applications that you're talking about? Can you kind of go into that a bit and without the, you know, the high tech language, but just you're talking to little lady that doesn't know that much, but can you give us a little taste of a few applications that it has absolutely transformed the way you look at real estate, the way you buy real estate?
Absolutely. I'll give you a few different buckets first, and then we can dive down kind of through each bucket. So the first bucket that everyone should look at when you're looking at real estate is about where to buy, right? The where to buy bucket, in my mind, especially for new investors, right? So folks that are in the first 3 to 5 years of their real estate investing career, full-time or part-time, that bucket is the most important because that's where people make the most number of mistakes, the where to buy bucket. So if you don't have a folder on your computer and your browser that basically has a set of apps that help you buy real estate and buy in the right places at the right time, then you're making a colossal mistake, an absolutely colossal mistake. So in that bucket, there's free apps and there's paid apps, right? And I use both of them. When I'm teaching, the free app that I use the most is called city-data.com. Now, most people know this app, right? So I'll go into a room and I'm teaching 100 people and I ask them, raise your hands on how many of you use city-data.com. And I get 20, 30, sometimes 40 people raising their hands. And they think that they know how to use the application, but what they really know is, well, you can go to city-data.com and you can see things like what is the income level of people. You can see how much single family homes are selling for. You can see the rents, right? But not one of those people I have found shows me effectively how to use this free website. Because if you think about it, the website is not supposed to be used at a city level. You're not supposed to just type in something like Orlando, Florida into that website. Because Orlando has really great parts and really awful parts. There's places where in Florida, in Orlando, where you're not safe at night just walking in those places. And then there's places where the rent is going to be 10 times higher, right? And the way to use these applications like City Data is to drill down. And what City Data allows you to do is to drill down to even an area that could be maybe 200 by 200 yards. That's how small it gets. Now, most people don't know that, but all you have to do is pick any city in the US, let's say Orlando, Florida, and it'll come up and it'll give you all the rents and it'll give you all of the income levels. But what you need to do is to figure out what is the minimum benchmark for income in that particular city or in that particular state. Students that come to my boot camp get minimum benchmark levels by city, and that's a paid event. But here's some basics, right? You do not want to go into an area where the median household income that is at the top of that city data page is under 40K, because those people will always be struggling to pay you rent. And whatever you think you're going to make in terms of your cap rate, you're not going to make that because of excessive delinquency, because of legal costs, because of eviction. So don't go into an area where the overall median income is below 40K. But you might see cities where the number is above 40K. So in Orlando, it might be 47, 48, and you're like, I'm good. Not really. Scroll down on the page until you come to a map of Orlando, and you'll see lots of little tiles on that map. Click on each one of those tiles. They represent that small little neighborhood, and make sure that the tile that you're buying in, that number is higher than 40K.
Interesting.
And that can make an enormous difference. And that's a completely free tool. On the same map, when you click on a tile, make sure that the unemployment rate for that tiny little tile is not more than 6 or 7%. Because if the unemployment rate is very high, then again, you're going to suffer from delinquency, eviction, high churn, and all of these other costs that are really the killer for profit, right? What kills profit is churn, whether that churn is related to non-payment or whether that churn is related to transitional tenants like Las Vegas has. Well, it's going to kill your profits, because everybody assumes that tenants are going to move once in 2 years, once in 2.5 years. And if they're moving every 12 months because they can't pay or they just want to leave for whatever reason, you're not going to make any money. And so those kinds of benchmarks are what I use. City data, there are 9 different benchmarks that I use in my boot camps. And when I'm teaching my boot camps, I hate PowerPoint. So when I'm teaching the boot camp, it's just demos, right? So I'm on that website and I pick favorite cities like Orlando or Columbus or Phoenix. And I tell people, look at these numbers. You look at these 9 numbers. You see these ranges. These are the right ranges to invest in. And then I give them bad cities to look at, like St. Louis or Cleveland or Detroit. Then I show them those same numbers, and you can see the drastic difference between the numbers.
Is Indianapolis on your good list, or is it on your bad list?
Well, portions of Indianapolis are on the good list. So Indy is one of those cities that is a block-by-block city.
That's like Houston,
very true. Right?
You do know Indy. So, you know it very well.
Right. So the short answer is the portion of Indy that is closer to the educational facilities, the university, tends to be a more affluent area. So people that say, I want to invest in Indy, the short answer is, I want you to go into city data, scroll to the map, right, for Indy. And now look at the portions of the map that are darker blue, not lighter blue. Invest in those places and you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. If you invest in any of the light blue or very light blue areas, you're going to be investing in, you know, body armor, you know, helmets.
That's not the type of investing we want either.
Right. So that's the difference between the light blue and the dark blue on City Dash Data, a completely free tool. So it's not about access to tools. It's about understanding what to do with them.
No, that's so good. I actually don't even use that tool. So I think that that's definitely something that we'll be looking at in our business. Is there one other app that you might want to mention?
Sure. Yeah. There's, again, as I said, I teach about 40 of them in different buckets. But in the where to buy bucket, specifically for apartments, the first one that I gave you is, you know, works for single family and multifamily equally well. But here's one that works really well for multifamily. Let's say you're looking to buy a duplex, quadplex, 10 unit, whatever it is. You don't know which places you should buy in and hold in, right? So this is for buy and hold people, not for buy and flip. There's a website, again, it's free. It's called weareapartments.org, W-E-A-R-E, apartments.org. This website shows you the projected demand and supply imbalance for apartments over the next 13 years. If you want to get rich, you want to focus on imbalances that are long-term. In the short term, you can flip. Flipping is a very useful activity because it creates cash. Flipping doesn't make people rich. Unless they're on television, there aren't really any very wealthy flippers, because the problem with flipping is you're being paid for your time. The moment you stop flipping, you stop making money. When you get into good areas, which are buy and hold, in appreciating markets, in markets with huge imbalances, you become wealthy. Because if you get beyond the first 2 or 3 years, which are always challenging for any multifamily project, then at that point, the property stabilizes. It keeps giving you money for a very long time. So I would go to this website and I would select metros, Indianapolis, select a metro, and then go down to the chart that shows you the supply and the demand. Obviously, you want the gap to be the highest. As it happens, the gap in the U.S. is actually not in the continental U.S. It's in Honolulu, because Honolulu at this point has no land left. So you'll notice that for the chart for Honolulu, the supply is just a line at the bottom. And then there's this demand that is just growing. I don't know how Honolulu is going to deal with its housing problems. I've tried to get into that market knowing about this supply-demand gap, but there really was nothing available in the marketplace that made any sense. So you basically had to buy something at zero cap today and then wait for the prices to go up, which I wasn't willing to do. Yeah. But there are many other markets that have decent cap rates, that have huge supply-demand gaps. Orlando, Florida, Phoenix, Salt Lake City, these have huge gaps. But then you look at a city like Pittsburgh, and there's no gap. Supply is higher than demand, right? So almost you're going to shoot yourself in the foot buying in a place like Pittsburgh where supply is significantly greater than demand. It'll take a long time for stuff to get absorbed. I know Pittsburgh's doing some very interesting things with self-driving vehicles and Carnegie Mellon University, but they also have 250,000 empty houses. Mm. It takes a very long time to fill those up, right? Yeah. So those are the sort of things that can really help you make the right decision when it comes to the first bucket, where to buy.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's just, my mind's getting blown just right now with these apps. And you just mentioned a couple of them. And I know that this, just whether you're buying single family or this new website about apartments, this could really just change the game, guys. And if you guys are interested in these couple of apps, and then if you want to give us any more after the show that are free, that are paid, Neil, we would love to hear them. We'd love to put them in our show notes at simplewholesaling.com/episode 100.
So I know, Neil, you invest in like 8 different states. So how much time do you put into yourself for just researching and using these apps and just all the data points that you need to find to know what states you want to invest in?
I think that the research is really part of our DNA now, right? So initially, at the beginning of the year, I create a presentation called Real Estate Trends, in this case, Real Estate Trends 2018. That takes me about 100 hours of research. And there's about 30 vendors whose data is in there. So, some of them you've heard of, Trulia and Zillow and Realtor.com, but some you may not have heard of, people like CoStar and Axiometrics and Reese, which are basically people that sell data for a living. And so I gather the data from those 30 sources and I look for commonalities, because Zillow is very tied to their methodology, which may work 1 year, may not work the next year. And so is Trulia and so is Realtor.com. But when I look at commonalities between them, if I see a city like Reno and it comes up in the top 3 in every god list, whether it's single family or multifamily, every one of those lists, it comes up again and again and again. Well, then there's the reason for that. That area has both momentum and it has fundamentals, underlying fundamentals that make it strong. So I'm looking for those sorts of areas. And once I've done that for the year, I make up my mind and I say, I'm going to invest in Utah, or I'm going to invest in Boise, Idaho, or in Reno, Nevada, or something like that, right? And once I make up my mind, when I reach out to brokers and I get properties from them, that's where I apply all of these tools, because I want to make sure that not only am I going into a great city, I'm going into a good neighborhood. Am I going into a great neighborhood? No, I don't have any properties in great neighborhoods, because great neighborhoods are 3-cap, 4-cap markets. I'm looking to make cash flow from my properties for my investors. So I'm really looking for good neighborhoods, above average neighborhoods. And that's what all these tools allow me to do, to figure out, to drill down and figure out if this is the right neighborhood to buy in and whether the rents and the sales comps in that area really match up to what I would need.
Man, sounds good. You know, it's just so much information, and you sound like just your research in all of this is absolutely phenomenal. You know, some of our listeners might not be that, you know, tech savvy and whatnot, and a lot of them are investing in single family homes. So what are some things that you do in your business? Because it sounds like you're very process oriented, you're very system oriented, and you do a lot. I mean, you know, trying to find a commonality between 30 different websites or, you know, 40 different apps, there is a lot to go over. So a man like yourself, how do you get all of this done, you know, and where do you start at building out these processes, I guess? Can you kind of go into that and how you are able to do all this and research all this?
Sure. Obviously, you need a lot of time to do these sorts of things, right? So the 30 websites that I mentioned, I do that in January. And, you know, by Feb, I know exactly where I'm going. But if you want to scale, right, if you want to be able to do a lot of different things, you've got to sit down, lock yourself in a room, and create process. And the creation of process, if you haven't done it before, is not as easy. But I can tell you, once you do it a few times, you get better at it, and you get addicted to it. So I use a lot of virtual assistants. These are people that live in the Philippines and India. They work nights, so they work my daytime. And I give them, you know, phones through Ring Central, and I give them email access to my company, and I give them email access to my inbox. And these virtual assistants, there's 17 of them, actually 12 right now that are active, but 17 in total. These folks carry out a very large percentage of the steps. And once I get comfortable with them, once they've been in my employ for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, those people then represent me. Thousands of emails are being sent from me, written by me as templates and processes that are being sent out by these people. I even template the responses because I know what the typical responses from people are. So build processes that allow other people to take over parts of your job, leaving you free to think. A lot of people simply don't give themselves time to think because they're so busy doing. And from time to time, once a week, basically look back at your week and say, what were the high value parts of my week? What were the low value parts? And how can I automate the low value parts by bringing in folks like virtual assistants or by using technology instead of doing everything in a manual fashion? And I tend to do that a lot. And again, it's something that I teach in my bootcamp. I teach a separate hour about how do you get to high value tasks from low value tasks. Now, one other piece on your question, right? You asked me this question on, well, I have time to do this research. What about folks that don't have time? Well, I'll give you a tip. And this tip, it'll take you 2 or 3 hours to figure out a lot of really good places to buy in, right? Every year in January, most vendors publish top 10 lists, top 5, top 10, top 15, these kinds of lists. All you have to do is lock yourself away for 2 hours in a day, once in a year, and start searching for top 10 cities that, you know, top 10 cities for single family, top 10 cities for multifamily, top 10 cities for rentals, then top 10 zip codes, then top 10 states, between states, cities, and zip codes, and between single family, multifamily, and rentals. That's 9 data sets that you can get to within 2 hours. Just look for the commonalities, and those are the best places to invest in. It doesn't really matter whether you're flipping or not. I would say that there's a slight difference. There's, you know, if you're wholesaling, if you're flipping, then go with cities that appear to have price growth momentum. Don't focus too much on rent growth, because rent growth is not tied to emotion. Price growth is tied to emotion. That's why California has been a great market for flippers, because prices grow here. So when you see a lot of price growth momentum in a market where the reviewers on the web are saying things like, there's no inventory in the marketplace, you know, homes get picked up within days, those are terms that you're looking for if you're wholesalers or flippers, because there's a lot of emotional investors in those markets. And that goes towards you when you're flipping those kinds of properties. 2 hours, no more. You'll get a huge amount of information from the web and you won't be paying anything for it.
So I'm ready to sign up for this guy's class right now. Like I could sit here and listen to him all day. This is fantastic. So it's such good information. So I know you're on your data points and you're looking at all this stuff and you're having your VAs help you out with all this stuff. What are some things that maybe you can forecast coming for 2018 in real estate investing?
Well, both good and bad, right? So on the good side, both the U.S. economy and the world economy are recovering, right? So we now, in the past, if you wanted to know what was going to happen in real estate, you'd start with the U.S. economy, right? So you look at your local economy, maybe your state economy, and you'd look at your country's economy. Unfortunately, that doesn't work anymore. That's because we're in an environment where our economy is very strongly affected by what happens outside. So in the last 2 or 3 years, the U.S. economy has been doing well, but it has been held back by lack of growth in the Eurozone, Japan, and to some extent in Asia, except for China and India. That is changing now. So in 2018, every single economic body that I know of is raising their forecast of growth. Whether that has to do with Mr. Trump's tax plan or not, I do not know. All I know is the net effect is that growth is accelerating, right? So that's good news, because when growth is accelerating at the beginning of a year, the chances of a recession in that year are practically zero historically. So if people are thinking real estate is going to crash, the stock market is going to crash, the economy is going to go into a tailspin, I don't see that happening unless we get a black swan event like 9/11. So that's the good news. You're going to be in a good environment for the next 12 months and possibly longer because of a worldwide recovery that's happening. This is the real recovery that's happening now since, you know, after 2008. And one of the reasons why I call this recovery real is because actual inflation is happening. The last 5-6 years, we've said we are recovering, we're recovering, but where's the inflation? In a recovery, there should be inflation. This year, we're finally beginning to see inflation in wages, and it's not just a U.S. phenomenon. It's happening in other countries as well. So we're going to get good price appreciation this year, and that's the good story, the good news for the year. Here's the bad news. I think most of you know this, but be wary about this. If prices go up and at the same time interest rates go up, margins go down, because margins are dependent on price of properties and interest rates. Well, unfortunately, both are moving in the wrong direction. Now, if you're a wholesaler or a quick flipper, this doesn't bother you, right? So if you're one of those flippers that is doing a flip that takes 18 months, you should be very worried, because there's 3, maybe 4 interest rate hikes coming in 18, followed by 2 interest rate hikes coming in 19. So if you're doing a project right now and interest rates are going to be 1.5% higher 18 months from now when your project is selling, you're going to have some cap rate issues. You're going to sell at a cap rate that is higher than the cap rate that you're buying at today. So short flips are perfect, right? Wholesaling, not affected at all. But I think long-term buy and hold people, if you're not locking in a loan today, if you're going in for a bridge loan 2 years out, be very careful. You're going to get burnt.
Mm. Wow. Neil, you know, for some reason, you know, when I'm hearing you talk about this year, because this has been just a topic, you know, in my mastermind group and everybody's talking about the real estate market's going up. Is there a recession coming? Is there a crash coming and all this? But when you're talking about this and you're, you know, 2018, I really trust you. So I'm going with what you're saying just by all the research that you're doing.
He sounds very convicted. I'm convinced. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in. Like, yeah. Some awesome evidence backing that up.
Our audience, you heard it here first. We're going to be fine this year.
That's right. Keep going. Keep going. Hey, just real quick, before we go to the next section of the show, you know, one question that I have is you talked about virtual assistants, which I'm a huge fan of using virtual assistants. I'm a huge fan of delegating, huge fan of, you know, the 4-hour work week, not saying I only want to work 4 hours, but just kind of having that mentality of sticking to the high level tasks for myself. I was just telling Brian before the show that why did I do this? You know, why didn't I just delegate that out in all these different tasks? But you have, well, would you say how many virtual assistants? 12 or 15 or 17? But my question with that is, how do you manage all of that? Because whenever you hire somebody on and you delegate something else and you develop a process or a system, like is it very difficult to manage all those people, to keep them active, to keep them on task, to do all that? Do you have a certain process to keep them active, I guess, is my thing.
So I'll give you two ideas on that that'll help you, right? One that'll work even when you have a single virtual assistant, one that's really designed for when you start to scale and start getting multiple virtual assistants. So you got a single virtual assistant and you want to give him very detailed instructions, but you're being lazy because these detailed instructions mean you have to take screenshots of your computer and then you have to go write pages and pages and pages and pages worth of stuff. And you don't really want to spend that much amount of time doing things. Well, don't, right? My way of giving people instructions is a software called Snagit, right? So it's a Camtasia software. You can install it on your computer or your Mac. I think it costs $30. And what I like to do is when I'm giving people instructions, I want to be very specific. I want to be crazy specific, right? So what I do is I turn on the Snagit video. So it's now recording my voice using a microphone, just like we're talking now. And then it's recording my screen. And then I start giving people instructions. And when I'm giving them instructions, I tell them what they need to be doing. I tell them what the exact result is going to be. As much as possible, I show it to them. And then I always finish by saying, add a tab to your tracker. So all of my virtual assistants have Google trackers. And every single project is a tab in the tracker. I never allow any of my assistants to work on projects without having tabs in the tracker. That forces them to ask me questions when they don't understand, because very often they don't understand. The other piece is, because this Snagit video, right, as I'm going through the video, I'm thinking about what are all the questions that this person could ask, and I'm trying to answer every single one of those questions, both by showing things on the screen and by saying and giving them examples on the screen. But this process is so much faster because I'm not taking screenshots. It's just a video of my screen. I'm just thinking out aloud and saying, these are all the things that I want to do. You'll find that you'll get very good very quickly, because when we're in video mode, when we're in show and tell mode, we actually tend not to have to think a lot about what we need to do. Obviously, you'll get better at it over time. But in 5 to 10 minutes, I can give instructions that would have taken 2 to 3 hours to write. And you know what's nice about Snagit is, even though it's a software installed in your computer, you have access to TechSmith.com for free. So when I finish the video, I click the TechSmith share button and it gives me a URL. In about 2 or 3 minutes, it's uploaded the video there and it gives me a URL. And I give that to the virtual assistant and they put it at the top of their tracker tab. Now in the future, if I lose that virtual assistant, guess what I'm going to tell the new person? Go to the top of that tab and watch that video. And then everything that the previous virtual assistant has done is in the same tab. So they're learning from the video and they're learning from what the person has done in the same tab. And now I'm much further ahead and I don't have to restart with a new assistant, because that's one of the problems, right? When you lose one of these people, you feel very handicapped because you've taught them everything and now that person's gone. But by following this two-step process and using Snagit to take short videos of things that I want my virtual assistants to do, I'm way ahead. Now, in my case, I add another layer to that. So what I've done is, for my 12 active virtual assistants, I actually have one of them as a manager on top of the others. And her job is to make sure that everything that I'm teaching these virtual assistants, she is enforcing that. There's enforcement of those things. And so she's my most intelligent virtual assistant. And I copy her on every instruction that I send to each VA. And she watches those videos and she's watching that virtual assistant, making sure that they're doing it right. She is their first resource. So they're not supposed to come to me and ask questions. They're supposed to go to her and ask questions. And because she's the most intelligent of them all, when she comes and asks me that question, I give her the answer. She's just about as good as me in giving those answers out to the other 11 people. Now I don't have to answer 11 or 12 people. I have to answer one person. So building a higher level VA is important. You have to pay them well. So my high level VA is paid so well that she really can't go anywhere. But for me, if I pay her double market rate, and market rate is $5 an hour, and I'm paying her $10 an hour, she is 90% as good as me. And my time's worth $200 or $300 an hour. So to me, it makes all the sense in the world to pay somebody 10 bucks an hour and be 90% of Neil. What I can tell you is, and I've proven this to my students by showing them demos in the bootcamp, there aren't 24 hours in a day. If you have virtual assistants and technology at your beck and call, there are actually 240 hours in a day. Mm.
No, I love that. I love the managing of the virtual assistants too, because, you know, I have a virtual assistant named Roxanne. She's an absolute rock star. We only have one, but sometimes, you know, it seems like every time we've had to hire a new one on, I don't know, it's just something, I don't know, maybe it's the language barrier. And I think that also gets to it too, is that they can also communicate a lot better with all the rest of the virtual assistants as well. And that's cool. That's awesome. Well, thanks, Neil. We are about to go into the section of the show that we like to call
Going Deep.
So in this section, Neil, we just asked some more questions about you and your life. And I know that one of your passions is teaching and training. I can just, you know, tell by that. And I know that you speak at events and you hold trainings. So what does it do to you, and why is it so important for you to teach what you're doing to other people and to watch your students be successful?
It's more gratifying than me doing stuff myself, because I believe in the law of abundance, right? I'm a very spiritual person. I believe that abundance only happens if you share it. And so I can do things by myself, but that's one person and my effect on the world is tiny. But if I teach 3,000 people a year, and out of them, even 30 go out and do something, I think that that gets counted overall in my ledger. And that's what I believe. And so to me, teaching actually is more fruitful in the long run from a spiritual perspective than doing. Now, I would never want to stop doing, because I think that teaching without doing is not ethical. You have to be able to do those things, which is also why I don't teach using PowerPoint. Because anybody can design beautiful looking PowerPoints. What you have to teach is by doing demos of what you do and by showing people your portfolio in action. And so I follow those processes, and I can tell you the end results are beautiful. The students are happy, and many of them have become my partner. So my project manager right now is a brilliant young girl. Her name is Leanne Fang. So she is a MIT graduate who worked for Apple. And her family has some money and she was looking to invest it. So she came to one of my boot camps and took it in San Jose. And then she came over to me and said, I really love the way you do things, but I want to work with you and with your company. And I said, Leanne, at the moment, I don't have a slot. The only thing I can think of is I'm trying to organize my project management software and migrate from a low-end software like Basecamp to a high-end one like Asana. She said, I know how to do that. Let me do it. I'll jump in. Don't pay me a salary. Let me show you my value. Well, you know, she showed me that value very quickly, and now she's a paid project manager and a partner in my company. And that is the kind of success that I want to have. Mm-hmm. Somebody goes from being a student to a partner because I was able to create some aha moments in her. And many of my students, you know, I don't hear from them. They come to a boot camp, they take the boot camp, but then 13 months later, I get an email from them saying, I bought this property and I did this and it was exactly as you said. And it just lights up my day. It's bigger and better than just making money. I think you have to be spiritually satisfied with what you're doing. Otherwise, you know, I don't think you can achieve your goal or mission in life.
Love that. Love that. Love your heart, Neil. Just, you know, we share the same values. Just, I love teaching. I love watching other people be successful. And I love the story with your student now becoming a partner in your company. That's amazing, man. And I just appreciate you just being on our podcast today and sharing everything. I mean, you're sharing gold nuggets. And I always tell at our events, or if I'm, you know, talking to one of the team members, if it's not about the big things, I think it's just those small things, like those small things that I've done, those small tweaks, that small app that I bought absolutely changed everything. And so if you're listening out there right now, just know that it's not the big things. It's those small everyday things, those little tweaks that you can do in your life or your business that it's going to change the game for you guys.
It's time for a touch of randomness.
So we're running out of time here a little bit, so we're going to wind down. And Neil, here at the end of the show, we like to just kind of do a little lighter side. We're going to learn a little bit more about you with just a touch of randomness questions here. Our first one here is just, do you follow any sports or particular athletes or anything?
Well, tennis and cricket. So in India, cricket is the big game. And though I follow most American sports, the passion is really for cricket. And my kids, who of course, you know, they were born in the US, so they like football. But they're also cricket, fanatic cricket fans. So we enjoy cricket a great deal. I've left India behind for most things, but cricket is not something that I could shrug off. So very often, because of the 12-hour difference, I'm up at 1 in the morning watching games. And so if I'm talking with you and I sound like a zombie, that's probably why.
Is there a particular like cricket club or team that you root for?
Just the Indian sports team. The club level cricket leagues have just been formed a few years ago. So I support this city that I originally came from, Mumbai, in kind of club level cricket. But, you know, national level cricket is still kind of where my heart is. And it's nice to have that passion. And then the other passion is not quite a sport, but I love playing online games like Civilization or SimCity, because SimCity appeals to me because I'm building an entire city. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It ties into what I do with real estate. So it's deeply satisfying to play SimCity online against other players.
I could see you enjoying that, Neil. I could see that a lot. Last random question. When you were a child, what was your dream profession?
Well, it was certainly being an astronaut. And some of those flashbacks I had recently, I read a book called The Martian, which was turned into a big blockbuster movie. And I got flashbacks of being an astronaut. But I have to tell you, I'm 45 years old at this point in time. I've realized that as children, we focus on those things that we feel would make us fulfilled. And I think that every job is fulfilling. It's really about how you do it. I think I would be a really happy fireman. I think I would be a really happy entrepreneur in some other field, maybe not real estate. Obviously, I dealt with the education field and I enjoyed it. I think it's all about constantly challenging yourself in the job and having that innate satisfaction. So I didn't end up an astronaut, but I'm not sure I would be any happier if I was an astronaut.
That's true. I love that. I love that. Well, thank you so much, Neil, for just visiting with us today. Like I said, if you guys haven't listened to this whole interview, you need to go back and listen to everything right now, because there's so many amazing nuggets that Neil has given us today. And Neil, if someone wants to reach out to you, where is the best place for them to go?
Multifamilyu.com with the letter U. So www.multifamilyu.com. That's where all of my free webinars are stored, the real estate trends webinar, multifamily fundamentals, my comparisons of various cities. There's a huge amount of information stored there. So that's the best place to start. My phone number, my email is also there.
Great. Well, you guys can go right now to the show notes, which is at simplewholesaling.com/episode100. And this is a wrap, guys. We are with Neil Bawa, an apartment investing across the United States. Thank you so much, Neil, and we wish you the best.
Thanks so much. Bye, guys.
See you.
Thank you for listening to Simple Wholesaling. If you enjoyed today's show, please head over to iTunes, give us a rating, and leave a review. Be sure to pick up a copy of our free ebook, The Simple Wholesaling System, by joining our community over at www.simplewholesaling.com/our-system. Thank you for listening to Simple Wholesaling. If you enjoyed today's show, please head over to iTunes, give us a rating, and leave a review. Be sure to pick up a copy of our free ebook, The Simple Wholesaling System, by joining our community over at www.simplewholesaling.com/our-system.